We're going to be looking at Revelation chapter 21 for a few moments this evening. Pastor John preached this morning the introduction to this last phase that we have in front of us in our series on end times. And as he looked and led us through studying Revelation 21 verses 1 through 8 this morning, we're just going to spend just a few moments this evening looking a little bit deeper into one small aspect of that. By the way, Pastor John, this afternoon my wife and I were talking about your message this morning and about something you said in the message. And my wife said, "Wow, I agree with that." Not that she doesn't agree with other things as well, but there was something you said in the message that just resonated with her and with myself, and it wasn't even a major part of the message. It wasn't even a focus, or it was just kind of a sideline when he talked about Jordan not being able to text boys. And I thought, wow, that inspired me. I actually went home and wrote a pastor chat, but because of the time, I don't have time to share it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to email it to everyone, because I thought something that he said was so important and opened such an important window into one of the huge problems in our culture today, and the importance of parents understanding that and making some decisions in their lives about how they can address that. And so I'll send that out as an email to all of our members, maybe our attenders as well. And just echo and agree with what you said. That was excellent. And I appreciate so much your all's commitment in that area of your family life and sharing that this morning in the message. That was tremendous. We are looking at the next today, and then, of course, next Sunday, we're going to be focusing on heaven. And we've stood our back is against all of the judgments and all of the problems, the tribulation period, then even the millennial kingdom, when the sin nature of man is still there. And there is an undercurrent of rebellion in the hearts of unsaved people that are born and raised in the millennial kingdom that just becomes a large-scale rebellion against Jesus Christ at the end of the thousand-year millennium. And finally, we've got all of that in our past. It's behind us, our backs to it, and we open up Revelation 21 and we read that all things are new. Wow, that is phenomenal. A new heaven and a new earth and a new city that we learned about this morning. And God is just introducing us to this great future and this amazing city that's coming down from God out of heaven. Now, Warren Walls said there's a problem in the text. He said if you take the dimensions of the new city, and if you take that, and if it's from here to where did you say? Denver, Colorado, the distance, the width. He said if its bottom plane is flat as you'd expect for a city, because of the curvature of the earth, the city's going to fall over. So he said there's a real problem in the Bible with this new heaven and the dimensions and the geography of it. Warren Walls, hey? Warren Walls. Leave it up to Warren Walls to find the mistake in God's holy word and bring it to our attention. Anyway, we were introduced to this great city and this bride prepared as a bride for her husband for her wedding day. And then over, it jumps over to verse 9, says, "Come, I'll show thee the Lamb's wife." And so we've got this great, exciting presentation of the new city, the bride, all this future glory, and then it's almost like a news flash. All of a sudden, God interrupts the new city, the new heaven, the new earth, the new city, and all of this, and he gives us what Pastor Stone preached on this morning regarding life in this new environment. And my, what a amazing picture God introduces. A life with God, living with God. All the former things are passed away. All things are new. Our life experience will be so different than anything we'd ever experienced, even during the millennial kingdom. All things are made new. You know, the Bible says in Isaiah 65, the Bible says, "For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered nor come into mind." Wow, what a promise. God will wipe the slate of our mind clean. We won't even remember the problems of our previous experiences. All things new. The former won't be remembered, nor come into mind, but be ye glad and rejoice forever in that which I create. For behold, I create Jerusalem a rejoicing, and her people a joy. And I will rejoice in Jerusalem, the joy and joy in my people, and the voice of weeping shall be no more heard in her, nor the voice of crying. Even the prophet Isaiah, recording the words of God, announcing this wonderful eternal state, described it by what's not going to be there. Just like what we see in our text. What's heaven going to be like? Carlisle Marney, a preacher, said, "The heaven of my fancy would contain no Democrats or Republicans. No games, no puzzles, no charts, no calendars, no engagement pads, no germs, no debts, no money, no Brussels sprouts, no elections, no professional pastors, no finance campaigns, no experts on anything, no pills, tranquilizers, hair curlers, tweezers, or stiff petticoats, and no Saturday evenings without a sermon ready." That was his description of what heaven would be like to him. But you know, God gives us a better list than even that of what heaven's going to be like when he says there's not going to be any sea, there's not going to be any tears or death or sorrow or crying or pain. All that is passed away. But one thing that catches my mind in the list of that which is not going to be there is no more sea. No more sea? You mean no surf? No white sand on the north shore of the Gulf of Mexico down there and being able to enjoy those beautiful white sandy beaches? No. No. No more sea. But the seagulls and the fishermen and the lazy sailboat, and no more sea. Pastor John mentioned that this morning, that for whatever reason God throws in, John looked and he was taken by the fact that there's no sea in this globe, if it is a globe, this new earth that God has created. What must the sea have been like to John? He was a prisoner on an island, separated from life with his family by the sea. In John's day, the sea was untamed. In John's day, widows would mount the top of their home to look to see if they were a widow, or the women, the wives would mount up on the widow's watch to look and see if their husband or their son's going to come back home from the sea, or whether the sea has made her a widow. The sea was fierce and untamed. The sea had all kinds of sea monsters that would swallow up whole ships. So the sailors' stories would tell. The sea was the epitome of everything I fear in life. It was that which is unknown, unexplainable, unpredictable. It's that which can allow me to earn a living or can take away my husband and leave me without a son. No more sea. No more sea. No more sea. In John's day, the sea was the heart of everything you would fear and be uncertain of and not understand. and the potential of all kinds of tragedy. What is heaven going to be like? The heaven of our future is a place where there is no more sea. And in its absence will reign peace, because there won't be anything to be afraid of. Nothing to cause me to cry. Nothing that'll take away what I love. Nothing that'll leave me empty. Nothing that will ruin my tomorrow. Nothing that will take away from me what I need. Peace will reign in the place of the fearsome sea of people's life. Well, the bottom line up front for these next couple of moments is peace now grows. Peace now. Peace now. On this side of this time when there will be no more sea. A time where there will be no crying, no tears, no sorrow. Where heaven is described by what's not going to be there, because our experience is that all of those things are real in my life this week. And one of the greatest ways to describe eternal heaven is the absence of that, and the peace that overwhelms my soul in the absence of everything that we might characterize by the sea. Peace now. How can I have peace now? I'm going to have peace then. How can I have peace now? Peace now grows out of dealing with what will not be in heaven. Can I deal with what is here now that will not be in my experience later? Yes, I can. And it is the secret to peace in life. Let me throw out three solutions to fear in your life and in my life. Just some food for thought. Taking this absence of what's not going to be in heaven later, just in a practical way, to how we can deal with those fearful things in our lives now and enjoy peace on this side where the sea is still present in our life. Three solutions. Solution number one, what can you do with your fears? You can ignore them. You can ignore them. Friedrich Buchner said, neither our greatest dreams or our worst fears come true. Do you realize what most people fear never happen? What most people stay awake at night worrying about never comes? A man by the name of Charles Poole said, we spend too much time running from enemies that are not hunting us, hiding from troubles that are not haunting us, and dreading diseases that are not hurting us. A large number of the things that we would fear in life, we need to just ignore them, because they're never going to come. They're never going to be a problem. They're baseless fears. Sometimes we need to just ignore them. Isaiah chapter 12, I want you to note just a couple of verses. The whole chapter is only six verses long, and it's worth reading in this regard. But I'll just want to take note of one thing in Isaiah chapter 12, which is a wonderful chapter about fear. And in Isaiah 12 and in verse number 2, Isaiah said, behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and not be afraid. Now, just that thought, just that one little thought, I will trust and not be afraid. Isaiah, what do I do with my fear? I'm not going to be afraid. How am I going to not be afraid? I'm going to trust God and not be afraid. Notice the order. I'm going to trust God and not be afraid. I'm not going to worry about what the possibilities are, because they may never happen. I'm just going to trust God and not be afraid. First solution to fears in our life are to ignore those fears. Some of our fears are merely handled by having such a confidence in God that we just ignore the storm clouds. It was in Kite, Georgia, and it was a sharecropper grandfather sitting on the front porch of their home with his grandson. And out across the flat land, way off in the distance, there were gathering storm clouds. After a few moments, you could see the lightning as it would come down towards the earth. You could feel the rumble of the thunder. And the grandson kept looking, the little boy just kept looking up at it and then looking up into the face of his granddad. And his granddad never seemed to even give notice to the gathering storm that was coming their way. And the grandson got more nervous and more nervous and more nervous as the storm seemed to be getting closer and closer. Finally, he looked up to his dad, his granddad. He says, "Granddad," he says, "don't you think we'd better get into the shelter before the storm hits?" And the granddad said, "Don't worry about that storm, boy. It's going to go on around." And it did. Now, the grandson could look at that storm, and he did, and he was worried, and he was afraid, and he was fearful. The granddad never gave it any mind. The granddad said, "Oh, not that one. It's going to go on around." And they never felt it at all. A lot of the things in our lives that people worry about, we need to just have confidence in God and ignore them. Second solution is we need to name them. We need to name them. Psalm 56 is... that's an amazing statement. It's all over the place. You can see this in many places, but Psalm 56 is one of the places where David named his fears. Or we could say David named his sea. If we wanted to take the analogy of no more sea. David said in Psalm 56, verses 1 to 3, he talked about his confidence in God. He said, "Be merciful unto me, O God, for man would swallow me up. He fighting daily oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up. For they be many that fight against me, O Most High. What time I am afraid." Verse number 5, he said, "Every day they wrest my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together, hide themselves. They mark my steps. They wait for my soul." David was naming his seas. It's interesting that in Isaiah, the Bible said, "Trust and not be afraid." Notice the order difference with David. David says, "I am afraid. And here's why I'm afraid. I am afraid. And let me give you the list of reasons why I'm afraid." Sometimes that which you fear is possible enough that rather than ignore them, you need to name them on your knees. "God, I'm afraid. And God, let me talk to you about what I'm afraid of. Am I ever going to be able to have a full-time job that's going to be able to enable me to make a living? Am I ever going to be able to..." And David went down the list on his knees before God, and he said, "God, I'm scared. I'm afraid. And God, here's what I'm afraid of." And the second solution we find in the Bible is sometimes we need to name our fears. What are your C's in your life? Now, some things you need to just ignore. It's probably going to go around. Don't even worry about it. If it comes, then you can name it later on if it does come. But just ignore it for now. But then, what are your C's that are very real that can't be ignored? What are the things you're afraid of? Is it sickness? Is it the lab report that might come back and indicate the cancer is real in your body? Is it that it just seems that Alzheimer's is no longer a fear that you can just set aside as probably not? Has it come to the point where you're wrestling with how you're going to deal with it in your home? How's it going to change your life? What are you going to have to do? How do you deal with the seas of life? The day's coming, there'll be no more sea. And you'll have nothing to be afraid of. But we live on this side of that future day. We have C's in our life today. And sometimes we need to name them to God with a broken heart. God, I'm scared. I don't know how I'm going to handle this. Is it failure that you won't be able to cut it at work? It's getting tighter and tighter. It's getting more difficult to hang on to security. And you don't know if you've got it in you to make the cut and stay current. And you're afraid of what the future holds in the economic market of America. Do you fear that? Is it money? That at the end of the paycheck, there's just a lot of month left over, and you don't know how you're going to make it. And I think of our missionaries over in Holland, the Albrights, and how they cut back and 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 rode bikes and kept their house colder and wore more clothes and cut back and cut back because they didn't want to leave the field and come home to raise more support. And so they stayed 15 years without a furlough, planting three and now a fourth church in, of all places, Western Europe. Do you fear the economic, the finances, the money? Is it crime? I got a little app on my phone that I can see where every child molester is in South Riding. I mean, the ones within a block of where, two blocks of where we're meeting right now tonight. I can see where every crime has been committed in South Riding. I can see what cars were broken into, what homes were burglarized. You say, doesn't that scare you? No, I look at it and I laugh and I say, look at this. Can you believe you could actually find this stuff? And then, you know, some people be paranoid over that. What are your fears? What are your C's? You got four deadbolts, sawed-off shotgun, and two 9mm, an AK, whatever, pepper spray in your back pocket. I'm not making light of any of those things. I'm just saying, what are your fears? Can you name them? Can you name them? What you're afraid of? David named his. He listed them while he was on his knees in prayer. He said, God, I'm scared. And here's why I'm scared. One of the solutions to dealing with fears in our lives are to name them honestly and openly to God. God, these scare me. And then the final solution, third solution, is that we need to overcome them. Those fears that we name need to be overcome. You say, how do you overcome them? Well, in Psalm 56, verse number 3, the psalmist said, what time I am afraid, I will trust in Thee. Notice the order. He's already scared. In Isaiah, I trust in You, and so I'm not afraid. Well, good. Just ignore the sea and go on. But David said, I am afraid. I'm already afraid, and here's why I'm afraid. And now after I've named it, God, I'm trusting in You. I'm trusting. And he goes on. We don't have the time, but this 56th Psalm is amazing. Those three little thoughts about God. How is it that we could overcome our fears? Psalm 56, verse 8, God knows. David said, God, Thou tellest my wanderings, put Thou my tears into Thy bottle. Are they not in Thy book? God, You've got a record. You know what's happened in my life. It's good to know that God knows. In verse 9, God cares. When I cry unto Thee, then shall mine enemies turn back. This I know, for God is for me. He's on my side. He's on my team. He cares about what I'm scared about. He cares about my stability when I'm scared to death. Tell Him your fears and then overcome them through confidence in God. Why can I have confidence in God? Because He knows what I'm going through. He cares about what I'm going through. And verse number 13 says, "For Thou hast delivered my soul from death, wilt Thou not? Wilt Thou deliver my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living?" God is at work in my life. God is active in my life. He is doing something in my life. And so I can have confidence and trust in Him. For John, the sea was something that epitomized all the things that could go wrong in life. You say, is that what God meant when He said that? I'm not saying that. I don't know. All God says is there's no more sea. Okay? There's no more sea. Anything beyond that is speculation. And so my speculation is, I wonder if John was sitting there on an island surrounded by the sea that kept him from his loved ones and his family. The sea that was, sailors say, are full of sea monsters and swallow whole ships. The sea that made women widows and old men and women childless. The sea, all that it contains, that keeps me from having peace. No more sea. How do I have peace now, though, when I have all those things? I ignore them. If I can't ignore them, I tell God what they are. And then after I tell God what they are, I trust Him. I trust Him because He knows, and because He cares, and because He's at work in my life. And so therefore, I can trust Him on my worst day when I'm afraid of the sea that's around me. We've got a great future, but we're surrounded by sea today. We've got to learn how to deal with it in our lives so that we can enjoy the peace of God every day. What are your seas? Could you name them tonight? Could you say, "This is my list, what I'm afraid of"? And then can you look at that list and say, "You know something? My God knows what's on the list. He cares about what's on the list. And He's at work in my life, in these areas of my life. And because of that, I can trust in Him."